Welcome to another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast on IB Sports Podcast Network. You can find the IB Podcast Network on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. I am your host, still reigning Universal Champion, Chief Keith Fleming. With me, back by popular demand, we missed you last week, ravishing Ron L. Tinsley, and maybe the happiest guy in the world because CM Punk's back. He's teasing a Daniel Bryan return. Sam the Shooter Howe. What's going on, boys?
Man, I am doing great. I just wanted to tell you guys, you did a fantastic job on that emergency pod. It was super necessary considering the great weekend of wrestling that we were given.
Yeah, I was overstimulated. There was a lot that went on. And it was, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I thought it was a great weekend. I'm excited for what's to come for AEW. WWE is also there, but I'm very excited for AEW.
All right, we've got a lot to cover. So let's get right into it. I'm going to start off the top with CM Punk's return. Ronell, let's go to you because, you know, me and Sam got plenty of time on the emergency pod to kind of discuss it. I want to know sort of what your feelings were on it and just take it in whatever direction you want to.
I thought that it was one of the most phenomenal moments that I've seen as a wrestling fan easily in the last 5 years. Feeling that electricity, I mean, that sustained pop was so chilling to listen to. Seeing, you know, Punk, seeing the fans in tears. And I love the fact that, you know, he got into his just doing his thing. It wasn't like a scripted promo, but he also didn't take unnecessary shots at WWE. I hope that that trend continues as he goes along. You know, I know a lot of these guys wind up doing too much talking about the E, and I'm hoping that Punk.
Miro, Moxley. Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm just hoping that Punk doesn't wind up being another one of the long lists of guys who continues to do that. But outside of that, I love the fact that they had shared even from the truck and seeing the guys that being fans while doing the show. It was just such an amazing, amazing moment. And I am so happy to that, you know, CM Punk is back in wrestling, back in AEW. And I just can't wait to see what he gets into.
The production company, I'm glad that they did share that because, you know, that was something we did not discuss. They did such a great job with the way that was presented, with the camera shots, you know, when they would zoom into Punk, like getting to see the tears in his eye. Sam, you know, he was talking about that sustained pop. Which do you think was more raucous, the Money in the Bank crowd or that crowd?
Just to clarify,
I know you know, but the Money in Bank in 2011.
Right. I think that you're comparing apples to oranges. I don't think that you can, you know, a guy who's been away for 7 years in his hometown, you coming back to announce that he's back. I can't. So beloved by that audience specifically is that the AEW audience is like unleaded Punk fans. The Chicago audience was like them willing him to win. Like, I feel like they're because I didn't think he was going to win. I thought he was done. I thought he was leaving.
I think everybody did.
And, you know, I'm not afraid. I know there are people like, well, how could you believe? I knew he was going to win. It's like, whatever, man. Like,
no,
I didn't.
Anybody that says that, like, knew they were going to win? No way. I mean, you might have maybe hoped, but I think everybody, especially that was the like epitome of John Cena always wins. And for CM Punk, I completely agree.
I would go, and in part because they were so hot, like that was like an hour-long match. Like they were hot from the moment he came in to the moment he left. And that match was like, you know, 40 minutes.
Right.
So but I don't want to pick one over the other because they're both really special.
All right, we're going to talk about Punk plenty more when we get into superlatives.
Spoilers.
Becky Lynch, we all know that we feel like they botched her return, but the report is that she is coming back as a heel. This was her decision. She was the one pushing it. I'll probably be in the minority here, but I actually now have hope for this. I think Becky truly understands the business. I think she's great at, you know, getting an angle over. I love just what she did on Twitter this week. I don't know if y'all saw where she both plugged the show Heels on Stars, but also, you know, with the report had just came out that day, it was obviously a nod to, hey, I am turning heel. And I do have hope with it being Becky that Bianca still has the chance to come out better than ever at the end of this, because if she ends up going over Becky and not a, you know, surprise where she takes a cheap shot, I would argue it's even bigger than beating Sasha at Mania to go over, you know, Becky.
I'm going to be the dour Ebert to your positive Siskel. Do you guys remember when Punk turned heel in 2012 and he had to, for months, do, you know, you people, and to get booed? Like, they did not want to boo him. And I don't think, did you guys listen to that pop for Becky? They don't want to boo her. So they're going to have to, she's going to have to come out there and do, you know, you people this, you people that. And they're going to have to do that. It's really just awful. Like, I feel like they're going to have to turn her into a massive chicken shit heel. And I think that they're going to have to take away not even what they did with Austin, but it's just so disappointing, because I get that they've talked about, you know, that it was her idea, but I hate to be a conspiracy theorist here, but we've talked about how they cool everyone off. And
it's like, give me credit for the take.
You were the one who came up with like the conspiracy theory about it. And I'm absolutely of the belief that like Becky was the biggest star in the WWE coming back. Listen to that pop. And how better do you cut somebody off at the knees so they're not taller than the rest of the grass? You make her a heel.
Ronell, are you in the middle? Positive?
I am going to stay positive, but I don't want to touch on it too much right now because I do want to kind of get onto that further at length. So I'll save my thoughts for later on down the show.
You got it. So next, Adam Cole lost his match in front of a very disappointed and pro Adam Cole crowd at NXT TakeOver Sunday. You kind of, all you needed to know about the situation was his t-shirts were immediately on sale after the pay-per-view ended. There is a report out that WWE is trying frantically to sign Adam Cole last minute. There was a report that came out today now that most top WWE officials believe he's gone. I told you guys both last week and after the podcast that he's gone. I especially the way they had him lose, where, I mean, come on, he lost to a guy that was handcuffed to a cage, which again, to me, was just a way of WWE being like, well, if he's not going to be one of our guys, we're going to make him look as weak as possible on his way out. And honestly, kind of made that match, in my opinion, a little bit of a bummer at the end, just because I just felt like the third fall wasn't great. But I think Adam Cole, what's best for him is to go to AEW, and I'm excited for him. But me and Sam talked about this off air. If he does sign with WWE, he's about to get paid. Get your money, son, because he has them right where they want, you know, or right where you would want to be in a, you know, leverage situation, because look at these guys that have left. They obviously want to keep him. So it's kind of a win-win for Adam Cole at this point, Ronell, right?
Oh, absolutely. I, too, was disappointed in that match. Considering you look at that card, you're like, oh, my goodness, this is probably going to outshine the main event. I mean, I was fully anticipating that. And that was the worst match on that card, I think. And I'm pretty sure a lot of other people agree with me.
Maybe the worst match between the two of them who have fought a lot over the last few months too.
Yeah. And it's really disappointing. But I agree with you that he's in the best position that with leverage. If he does get a big offer from WWE, I don't blame you, Adam. Get your, like you said, get paid, kid. Absolutely. If he doesn't, again, if his options that is that we as wrestling fans are going to be in a great position no matter where he lands, especially if it is in AEW, because there's, you know, a lot to do. They have more time to fill, like I had said in the group, you know, they now have a new show. So he can go in there and immediately make noise no matter what kind of program they want to put him into.
Sam, did you see the Being the Elite this week where the DMD was on there with her and she goes, are we not going to talk about the, you know, the elephant in the room? And they're like, what? And she goes, you killed my husband. I'm really excited about him being paired with her. That's one thing in AEW we have not seen as a power couple.
Randy and Cody.
They haven't been playing that though.
Yeah, that's fair.
I will say though, that the WWE is for the first time in 20 years needs to sign him. It is a very bad look if they don't sign him. It is, and if I was in that locker room, I would, and he doesn't sign back, I would be like, I'm not going to be concerned about AEW, but AEW has all of the momentum.
Not all of it.
No, you can't say all of it. There's I mean, a
they
lot
just
of
had like record ratings for SummerSlam, you know, Raw, SmackDown.
All of the creative momentum.
Okay, that's fair.
I think that and the setup for the future. I mean, that's the other thing. It's one thing to sign a 40-year-old Bryan Danielson and a 40 almost 43-year-old CM Punk. It's another thing to sign a 36-year-old or 34-year-old Wyndham Rotunda, 32-year-old Adam Cole. All these guys they have that are going to be stars for the next decade.
Well, I will stop you there just in fairness that, I mean, I guess you can say Miro is a star and I guess you could say Moxley is, but I mean, I just think about like somebody like Pac, who everybody talked about, oh man, with him in AEW. And I mean, let's be honest, he hasn't been really utilized the way that we thought he was. And I do have, you know, we talked about this again off air today, but this is like, if they end up signing all these guys, this is where it's going to get tough for AEW because they have, to your point, so much young talent. And I mean, these guys are not even young when you talk about their own homegrown guys that are much younger than that. You've already got like the Malakai Black and they only have 3 hours of television each week. I'm sorry, I do not count AEW Dark for anybody that's going to say they have AEW Dark. It doesn't count. It's not on TV.
And Elevation.
Again, not on TV.
I know. I'm with you. We're old. I don't watch YouTube.
I mean, come on. It's going to be difficult, right? Like, that is going to be a very fine line to book correctly where you both build up those stars, not put down the guys or, you know, maybe not even put down, but they just get forgotten. Some of your own younger talent. It's a lot of balls in the air. I think you're the one that's mentioned several times. You don't want to get too much too soon.
Well, but I would also point out that, you know, cause I'm a big Pac fan, has absolutely been utilized better than he was in the WWE.
Right. But people saying he's going to be a star. Wait till he gets, he's not been a star.
Also, I do want to point out that, I mean, there is the possibility they can use some of these established guys to possibly interest these us old men to turn on one of these internet shows one of these days. I mean, unlikely, but it's, you know, out there.
Yeah, they could use that Jon Moxley. Let Jon Moxley wrestle on Dark and Elevation.
I was going to say, could you imagine the pushback if the next time you'll see CM Punk and Daniel Bryan Russell will be on AEW Dark. I'm sure TNT would love that.
I guarantee you Bryan Danielson would be willing to do it.
But again, what we were talking again today, you know, they've got also, you know, execs and people in television and stuff that have expectations, and that's going to, unfortunately, it, you know, maybe it doesn't ultimately make the decision, but definitely puts pressure on decisions made. The last thing I want to talk about, because we're still on this and then we'll get the superlatives. Meltzer, who I sometimes hate even quoting some of his ridiculousness. AEW is really after Bray Wyatt, which I love how he puts the really in there. I'm a little surprised because he's a phenomenal talent. obviously we all know that we all just talked about just what an amazing character worker he's been in his time in WWE, but you want to talk about putting a square in a circle hole, because Bray is not necessarily this great in-ring worker. And for the most part, everybody in AEW is in an upper echelon of, you know, work rate. I mean, I know Sam might say Moxley, but I even think Moxley is a really good worker for what he does. Bray just really doesn't have that many great wrestling matches that aren't against these superstars. Bray creates moments and promos and, you know, presentation and stuff. Are you at all surprised that they would be going after him? Because I just don't know how they would utilize him.
No, I'm not at all. I think that he's somebody who Kevin Nash described himself as, he said that, am I Fred Astaire, you know, by myself? No, but give me a good partner and I can be, you know, I can be led. Right. I think that Bray is somebody who can't carry a match the lesser worker, but absolutely holds up his end of the bargain. I think that he is one of the most creative minds in pro wrestling today. I think that, and this is hugely important, I think that he is, that is something like you need the circus theory. You need the guys who are able to do everything. You need the people who can, and so Bray is important with that. And I think that, I also, with Meltzer, one thing to remember is that you can generally tell who gives him scoops because of how he reports on them. He is, I generally trust what he has to say about AEW because he's getting that from people. He's not getting that from, you know, somebody who
because he's in the production meetings with Tony Khan and the rest of them.
No, but I think that Tony Khan is calling him.
Yep, absolutely.
That's what I'm saying, is that, and I think that the Young Bucks are calling him and giving him information. So yes, I think that he has a very good idea of what's going on in AEW.
Yeah, but just the really after Bray Wyatt, all you got to say is he's going after. Ronel, would he be a good fit?
I think so. I completely agree with Sam in that I believe that Bray is definitely one of the best wrestling minds right now, or at least in terms of creating for yourself. So I think he could work well. Just like you guys said, you know, given the right partner, he can turn a lot of really mediocre feuds into a lot better just by, you know, cutting some really good promos. So if that's the call that they're going to do, then, you know, I think that he could fit. I just hope that it works along with building up some of the younger talent.
I would like to just say that if they signed both Bray Wyatt, Wyndham Rotunda, and Adam Cole, that AEW in the past 6 weeks will have signed the best wrestler of his generation in Bryan Danielson, the best talker of his generation, the best psychologist of his generation, CM Punk. They will have signed the most creative mind that I've seen, a guy who's gotten over two gimmicks that had no business of getting over in Wyndham Rotunda. And they'll have signed a guy who I described as, imagine if they threw Shawn Michaels into a dryer in Adam Cole.
Right.
So,
but I would argue, how are you going to do all those guys with 3 hours and all the guys you got and not put down MJF and Hangman and all these other guys? There's only so many spots. And it's just, again, it's going to get difficult the more people you bring in, because it's just limited time, people you can push.
Unless they get to the point that they can push Rampage to also being a 2-hour show.
Yeah, I've heard that there's like that Turner is interested in expanding the AEW footprint. And I think that there's that. There's also that, like, you don't need people on every week.
Okay. But again, they're not, if you're going to be talking about TV, I think that they would argue you do. If they're going to be adding an hour, they're going to want the guys that the TV people see is the best on. So let's move to superlatives. Wrestler on the rise. It's simple for me. It's Becky Lynch. You come back, you get that pop. Rightfully or wrongly, you win the title and, you know, hell, Sheamus time fashion. It was a big week. And again, bad execution, but I have so much faith in Becky. And it was kind of like with Reigns, and we've seen that what that's turned out. You want to talk about one of the most talented people in wrestling. Becky Lynch was the hottest star in wrestling. And she was just on the top of her game. She could promo with anybody. And I'm telling you, tomorrow night, I cannot wait for when Roman Reigns is in the middle of that ring and she interrupts him, because it's going to happen. It's going to be a moment. And I can't wait to see those two in the middle of the ring, probably both saying to acknowledge me and, you know, building each other up. But I think it's going to happen. Ronel, who you got for your wrestler on the rise?
My wrestler on the rise is my man, Damian Priest. Now, you know, I've always been high on my guy Priest since his call up, since before his call up to the main roster, beginning with his winning the NXT, the North American title, and his subsequent time. I was saying he was the most ready, one of the most ready for prime time performers in NXT. Following that call up, he was getting paired with Bad Bunny and the Miz and Morrison feud, you know, at SummerSlam, and we're already seeing the potential that WWE must have saw in him. Now, this week, defeating Sheamus for the U.S. title at SummerSlam, and then followed by a rub by getting into a program with Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre on Raw, Damian Priest is having one hell of a quote-unquote rookie year in WWE. That's my wrestler on the rise.
Samuel?
I went with Ilya Dragunov, who I will get more into his match with Walter later, spoiler alert. But between that and his banger of a match with Roddy Strong, he just had a great week. And for somebody who I knew for his other match with Walter last October, which is arguably, you know, match of the year and a WWE adjacent property. Well, it's hard to call NXT UK, but he just had an amazing week. And really, you know, that match that he had was the very definition of going follow that motherfuckers.
Strong style. His chest was just, when they interviewed him after the match with the title, I had a hard time looking. I mean, that, moving on to wrestler on the slide, Karrion Kross, which, you know, none of us are a big fan of Karrion Kross, so it's not like we're going to cry over this, but you lose your title, you get called up, they put you in a mask that makes Malakai Black's headgear look cool. It's been a rough week for Karrion Kross. And then the report to come out that they did it for merchandise. Like,
it didn't work for Tensai.
Yikes.
Nobody's going to buy that.
It's awful.
He's a heel. He looks awful.
You know, maybe I'll be wrong and Karrion Kross will have some kind of career, you know, in WWE that makes an impact, but I haven't seen it from the get-go. And I don't have a lot of faith after, you know, what we've seen this week. Sam, who's yours?
Mine is the WWE in general. And piggybacking off of that is that Vince has not looked more like an out of touch, senile old goat than he has with, you know, thinking that the Karrion Kross thing is a good idea, turning Becky heel.
I don't think you can say though immediately that the Becky thing is a failure. You can say that the execution of the bat is bad.
I think it's a good idea. I can say that. I think the turning her heel is a bad idea. And I think the way that they went about it, I would also say that in the moment, like I told Ronell before we started, the wind got taken out of the sails of SummerSlam for me, where they followed up the Becky Bianca moment with that fucking promo for Blood Money in the Bank in Saudi Arabia. It was just everything that I hate about the WWE inside of about a minute. And it's just, they look like the worst thing in the world is to look uncool. And AEW looks so much cooler than the WWE right now.
Mm.
My wrestler on the slide is you, Chief Keith Fleming. Just because this was the one pay-per-view that you didn't call for Becky Lynch to come and she arrived.
I didn't call it on the page, though.
No, but for real, I'm going to take it back to Thad Albert in playing Buck and pile on to what Sammy was saying, WWE creative. Now, I'll preface all of the following by saying I can totally understand the need to bring back both Brock and Becky, and I'm positive in the end the appropriate storylines will be decently told. I'm holding out hope. But as you guys stated on the Skinny Pod, there were other options you could have taken, and yet you chose the worst to end Bianca's title run. That's strike one. Strike two is you did most of the Lashley-Goldberg setup decently, but to have Goldberg's very first loss as a could-not-finish leading into, which I pray it's not, another Saudi match.
That's what it is. That's 100% why they brought Brock back.
Puke worthy. Final Strike comes from Raw, which thank you to Jay Gilmartin for showing that it had a near 15% increase in viewership, only to deliver one of the most lackluster pay-per-view shows on television, which we have gone full 2021 by upping the black-on-black crime by placing Mustafa Ali, his protege Mansoor, against Jinder Mahal and his crew. Outside of the best part of what we call Raw, the RK Bros in a damn good singles match, the rest was sloppy with a crap ton of incomplete storytelling. We're entering new territory now, especially that Punk has arrived. Daniel Bryan is coming to be assumed. So I understand the two are differing products, but with the budget you guys have, man, do better with your main products.
Well, let's just say, though, to be fair, Dynamite took a big turd on Wednesday. They had all that momentum, and they took a big turd. So, again, good and bad shows. Raw's been bad for forever. They just did 2 million people for SmackDown, almost 2 million for Raw, or 1.5 million. SummerSlam was the biggest ever. I'm just saying that, yes, there is some stuff that's really frustrating. Raw's awful. That's hard to defend. But Roman Reigns at the top of his game. It's one of the best storylines and wrestlers in forever. Becky Lynch is back. Brock Lesnar's back. Edge and Rollins had one of the best matches I've seen in a long time. So you got to take the good with the bad. And again, AEW had a great 7 days. And then I felt like that Dynamite was just really very disappointing for what they had and all that momentum. But it is what it is. Let's do Hill of the Week first. It's the Chief, Roman Reigns. And I said this in the group, and I mean it, and he deserves congratulations. It hasn't been talked about enough. He is now officially the guy in WWE. And I know there's some people that will say, oh, he's been the guy. Bullshit. This is a guy that before this title reign, he had 3 title reigns, I think, that combined for 160 days. He had had numerous times where he had a huge moment coming, and shockingly to everybody, including him and his father, WWE would just kind of say, nope, we're not going to do it. You had the Rollins cash in. The even more baffling, because I thought the Rollins cash in at least was brilliant booking. It made, you know, a great storyline, the heist of the century, all that. I understand it. But then to follow it up after he beats Triple H for the title and Undertaker to, at the time, we thought retire him, they set him up for this rematch versus Brock. And yet again, they have him lose for reasons we'll probably never know. He gets leukemia and misses, you know, off and on the next 2 years. And he came back 1 year ago, won the title within a month. He's going on a 1 year reign. In that time, he's beat all comers. He stacked Daniel Bryan and Edge at Mania. And again, I think it's really important to say he pinned Cena as a heel clean, which, has that ever happened?
I'm not going to.
Has a heel ever pinned Cena clean?
Yeah.
Are we not counting Punk in 2011?
I don't know. Well, I mean, what would you call that? Would you call him a heel at that point?
I mean, I think officially he was to the WWE, but
he definitely wasn't going forward, right? So
right. Brock Lesnar.
Don't put an asterisk. Oh, that's fair. No, that's a good call. Yep.
SummerSlam is not kind to Cena.
Oh, you're right. He has had a rough. Brian beat him there. Go ahead. Let's go with Hill of the Week, Rono.
My Hill of the Week is Becky Lynch. No denying that having the man back on WWE programming is great. It's a big deal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if the piss poor performance they offered us Saturday night at SummerSlam is not followed up by an extremely egregious act of some sort on SmackDown Friday night, then WWE Creative will get an upgraded superlative, as they will belong right here as Heel of the Week. I know I'm echoing the same sentiments I commented in the group, but if they don't have something better than Becky coming out and taking shots at the crowd and or Bianca Belair, hopefully without going full Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather, or
Spencer,
then I will have a serious problem with the execution, and the story will fall flat even if the plan is for Bianca to reclaim the title by Survivor Series. I'm holding out hope that this
I don't think it's going to be by Survivor Series, so you're going to be disappointed. It's going to be a long – she's going to have to build her way back up. Part of it's Becky's going to, I guarantee you, not give her a chance You know, she's gonna yep, that type deal. But again, I think that's good for Bianca in the long run.
Oh yes, absolutely. That's why I'm saying, you know, I'm holding out hope that this is going to pay off in the end. Sammy, I think you might be right that the best bet might be turning Becky into a chicken shit heel.
Oh no, I didn't say that was the best bet. I said
no. He said that he's worried that's what they're gonna do. Which I hope it's not, because the way they had her pin her. I mean, to me, what would be most interesting is to have Becky turn on the fans, but keep her good. I mean, the most interesting heels are the ones that really can't be beat. You know, and again, I'm not saying she can't cheat. I'm not saying, you know, but she doesn't need a, because she's the man. She does not need a back down for fights.
She's good enough for that.
Exactly. But like, they need to just change her character, which, again, I'm holding out hope that Becky's good enough to where she can walk that line. Sam, go ahead.
I'm going with WWE creative, just like with that decision. It feels like they're making money hand over fist. They're not going to change anything. But the one thing that could get me to really watch the Bad Blood Money show in Saudi Arabia would be just to see Keith's reaction if Brock beats Roman there. Keith shitting himself.
Well, remember, though, you've already said that you can't come on that podcast. So we're already trying to get a third person to join me and Ron. Now we may do a live stream of it.
Touche. But yeah, with WWE Creative, it just feels like they really needed to respond. As I said, all the momentum's with AEW, and you can draw as much money. I don't understand the logic behind doing a good show. Like, that doesn't mean that you don't have to put in a good show. And they had three good matches at SummerSlam.
I thought SummerSlam was a good show. I did.
I thought that you had three good matches, and I thought that it was the stink of the show was covered by the main event. And I think that it's not sustainable. You need a strong mid card, and it's not great.
All right, face of the week I don't know what we're gonna call you, but I'll figure out something. Go ahead, Sam. The person that's complaining,
the white meat baby face, CM Punk. I am excited. He has not yet cut what I would feel like is an in character promo. He's cut. They're fine. I liked them, but they were basically, hey, I'm back. I'm happy to be back.
I think he is in character, though, don't you? Like, I don't know if he can be a character anymore because of how big he is and what he means and just everything. I think he's going to be sort of this genuine guy that he's been.
No, I think that he's 100%. I think he's going to be cutting character promos.
Well, I hope that he turns heel then, because he's not a very good face. Like, if he continues to do what he's doing now, it works. If he goes to sort of the face work that he did in WWE, I would rather him stay just as himself.
I think that he's going to be more likely, but I think that he's going to eventually feud with somebody who can cut an interview.
Any chance that he turns heel on Darby in Chicago?
No, you can't turn him heel in Chicago. Okay. No one's going to boo him. He could murder Michael Jordan and 50% of the crowd.
No. Okay, if you'd have said Darby Allin, no, not Michael Jordan. Okay, so
50%. Mark, no, because 50% of the crowd would be like,
No. I'm going to mute you. You're getting muted. Mike Ditka. Go ahead, Ron. Go ahead.
RK-Bro, man. Now, I understand we've been riding this train for the entirety of the story. Sam, I don't care. You're going to have to, like, mute me or something for the next, like, 35, 40 seconds. Yeah. Randy and Riddle set the tone for what could have been a much better pay-per-view, especially for one of the big four, by capturing the Raw tag titles in the opening match of Slam. I'm with you, Sam.
The most I've enjoyed Randy Orton in 14 years.
But, you know, right now they're in the feel-good part of the story. This is classic storytelling. I had a lot more drawn out, but I don't want to get too long. But it was classic storytelling. We're at the feel-good part. They followed it up with the celebration where Riddle gives him the scooter. The scooter gets used by Randy in the match. I absolutely love that. You see how excited Randy was for Riddle's win. Like, we're at the chicken noodle soup part of a classic tag team story. So
I'm hoping that Riddle is the one who turns on Randy, honestly. I would be super excited.
It would be great for him to say that, you know, what he learned was that, you know, don't trust anyone. You, Dad. Yep, exactly. And also just want to real quickly before I get into mine, Randy Orton is not only just putting him over in the ring, but like the promo that he gave after SummerSlam, it's a big deal. I think Sam may have brought this up before. You can tell Randy Orton truly likes this kid. I mean, like, I don't know if he sees a lot of himself or what it is, but there's definitely a real effort for Randy to try to get him over, and it's working gangbusters.
I love that they hit the classic pose with the tag team titles draped over Riddle too.
So the face of the week though is Edge. He's entering territory for his age. It's the greatest wrestler I've ever seen of 47 and older. I mean, since his return, he has had long, like, drawn-out great performances. I know a lot of people did not like the Mania match with Orton last year. I actually really enjoyed it. I hate that he got hurt at the end because we kind of missed out on, you know, what the original plan was for him. I thought the Mania match with Reigns and Bryan was great, which, again, I know that, you know, when you're working with Daniel Bryan and where Roman Reigns is at, you know, that's not saying too much, but then again, him and Rollins, and again, you people who listen to the podcast know I'm higher on Rollins than most people. The dude can really go in the ring. And I just love that they told an old school wrestling story where it kept building and building and building and building. And man, that last 10, 15 minutes. And again, just to remind you, Edge is 47 freaking years old. And, you know, 30 minutes into a match, he's still able to go like that. It's so impressive. And then the entrance alone, which I guess apparently now is a heel moment. If that is true, that, you know, was a heel moment. But
no, it's no. Edge didn't know. I actually thought it was very sweet. Like, I actually think it's very telling about the kind of people that Edge and Christian are, that they both really wanted to help this guy out who gave them who was supposed to be the focus of the brood. I think it says so much about them that they both tried to help him out at the same time. I wouldn't say that's a heel moment.
Okay. But again, Edge is just doing phenomenal work. The match of the week, for me, it was Cena Reigns. It really delivered. And again, I have to eat crow on the fact that for a long time, I said John Cena was not good in the ring. The proof is in the pudding that he's big match, John. And it is fair because when you really need a big match out of Cena, he always delivers. And yes, there is fairness that a lot of times, you know, he's better with certain dance partners. He's obviously better with, you know, the better wrestlers. But him and Reigns, I thought, put on just a fantastic main event. And the one thing that I did not mention about Reigns that I want to be sure to mention real quickly when I was talking about him being the guy, the presence and the aura and the fact that if you look, he owns the crowd now. When he is out there, every eyeball in that arena is on him. People are not even talking over his promos anymore. I mean, he has gotten to where he truly owns the WWE universe. And I mean that in the best way. When a guy is at the top of their game and everything they do just draws the attention, you know, the eyeballs and everything from the crowd. And again, just want to tip my hat to Cena for, you know, I mean, that was a long, I mean, it'd been what, 3 years, I believe, since he had been in a wrestling ring, and they tore the house down. It was a great main event. Kudos to Reigns. Kudos to Cena. And I will agree to Sam's point. The only reason I think it's a good pay-per-view, they saved it at the end with that match. And then also you had obviously the Edge Rollins just a few matches before. It was just a fantastic main event. And that's, you know, this was a big match. So for that to deliver, kudos to both of them. Ron L., who's your match of the week?
I love how, before I get to mine, you're sure. Right. Even they're even hanging on to every word, even while he's talking crap to the wrestler. Like, they're not even booing that you can hear this. But like you just said, mine is Edge versus Rollins, man. We're getting low on time, so I'm not going to really have the time to get into it in depth. But the build, again, classic build. They used a lot of the old promos, the Edge doing.
We have 10 minutes, Ron. I'll say what you want to say, bro.
Edge got to do. All right. Well, they used the old promo 2 weeks ago. You know, my promo of the week when they had set this match last week. Edge reintroduces Brood Edge to the universe, and that had me absolutely sizzling. Like we said in the preview show, you know, had a chance to be match of the week contender, and it delivered. The match psychology was great. Rollins, you know, worked in that all over against the stairs.
We're having trouble hearing you a little bit, Ron.
Sorry.
There you go.
Over the stairs, you know, worked the neck breakers. I absolutely love that. You know, trying to soften them up for the curb stomp. Edge bringing back the execution, the spear out of the ring, the showing the resiliency and the avoiding and countering the stomp. And then, you know, bringing back the supreme intensity. Like
the pedigree said, from Rollins, like when he went for the pedigree, I about lost
spear,
it.
That spear into the pedigree was beautiful, beautiful. But, you know, like you said, Edge at 47 still had the intensity to beat Rollins' head into the mat before slapping the crossface back on, man. That was masterful work in the ring. You know, kudos
for
to
someone
Edge
in their 40s. Edge is giving me hope that I can, you know, get stronger and, right. You know, more jacked as I get older. So
him and Bobby Lashley.
Amen. Sam, I know the match that you're going to talk about was one that I've strongly considered. Go ahead.
Before I get into that, I just want to touch quickly. I was impressed. Cena had been out of the ring for 2 years, 2.5 years, and is 44. Edge and Rollins, as much as I find his personality off-putting, think he's an amazing wrestler. My match of the week, like, you guys, great picks, but I don't know how you could watch Walter and Ilya Dragunov and not think that was the match of the week. I mean,
thank you.
Well, some can think it's too physical. I mean, honestly, myself, like, that's too much. I don't like fighting.
I'm of the belief, and Dragunov has the dino damage ability that Sheamus has, where I don't think that's just what Dragunov shows damage, same way that Sheamus would. And that was a war in a way, and really probably should have been. I get why the NXT title was the main event, but oof, I mean, no one could follow that. I was, you know, so on the edge of my seat. Just a brutal, you know, strong style match. I mean, Walter's great at that. And Walter,
is that one of the reasons that the O'Reilly and Cole match fell flat?
Yeah, is that, you know, those are guys who also do American strong style really well, but that sort of European, you know, and Walter's chops and just everything they did looked agonizing. And
I loved in the end that the tap came quick. It wasn't one of those long ass sleeper holds. He got the choke in and the tap came quick.
And here's what I want to know about Walter, and this is the thing that blows my mind. How much of a beast do you have to be that your power bomb is the least painful looking move that you throw? I was like, thank God he's power bombing Dragunov. That has to be a relief compared to those chops.
It's a lot like Big Show. You know what I mean? Like, to where Big Show, when he's slapping people, it feels like that's more effective than even like his choke slam. Cause again, it's just, you can feel the physicality. I want to know how big Walter's hands are too. I know you said, I think he was 6'3", 6'4". Is that what you told me, Sam?
6'4", 300 pounds.
Yeah. His hands look like he's Big Show size, which is just crazy. We're going to skip promo of the week. It was Punk. There's no need to go into that. Let's do storylines you need to know relatively quickly, Ron L.
I'm hoping that we're drawing close to the draft, because with the return of Brock and Becky, SmackDown was already the loaded show. It is now the loaded baked potato show, because like, you've just got all kinds of toppings. Have it your way. And I'm not.
Let me ask you something real quick. Would it make sense to put the ladies on one show and separate it?
No. There's no way.
No, once we get everybody back and healthy,
wouldn't that be the best way to divide the star power? Because you can argue two of the biggest four stars in the company are women. If you put them all in one brand, you don't have two brands to separate the division.
That's true. And you could use that to build up the women's division more by having more matches on Raw.
You don't have multiple titles, right? You just have the tag titles and the women's title. I think it's one of the easiest ways to fix some of the issues that they have. You turn Raw into more of the women's program. I'd watch the hell out of it. I've been saying for the last 2 years, the women are carrying WWE.
I would. I just don't think that they're going to allow it. And,
okay. Samuel,
even if you do,
this is also the part where we reveal that Ronnell is an executive for the USA Network.
Samuel. All right, let's keep this moving. Sam.
But is Jericho really going to, like, I at first was like, there's no way that he retires. And I'm like, is it possible that he doesn't wrestle in AEW anymore? He just does, like, the occasional New Japan thing. I mean, he's 50.
And they're going to be really disappointing, though, if not, because they just gave.
Yes,
the finish to a match that, you know, as a feud, really, I thought it was over, right? Like, wasn't that the whole point of the five labors of Jericho, is we're finally going to move on from this? And
yeah, this feud's had more false finishes than a James Brown concert.
All right. Well, you had one good joke this week, Sam. That was impressive. Just kidding. That really was. That was a walk-off. Just da-da-da-da. That is probably the biggest storyline, because, I mean, God, it would be so shocking. And I mean, maybe that's what they're setting up, is a shocking, you know, Jericho retired. And I think Sam made the wonderful point today that if you don't think MJF could eat off of that for the rest of his career, being the guy that retired Jericho and was undefeated against him, like, that would be how you build a superstar who's 25 or whatever years old. My storyline is just the AEW main event. And again, like, what do you do? I mean, Omega to me has just finally hit his stride, right? Like, I finally am really enjoying this heel Omega, the work he's doing. And we already know that they paused the Hangman Championship, right? You know, you have the potential for these dream matches of Omega versus Punk, Omega versus Bryan. I mean, these are like, you know, sell out big paper. I mean, like, legit. You know, people would really want to see. And I'm not just talking about diehards. I'm talking about casual wrestling fans would be very interested in. But then you got to think about, like, somebody like MJF. You got to think about, like, the Hangman. And again, if you're bringing in Rotunda and Cole and all these guys, I mean, it's going to be very interesting just to see where they go. Because, I mean, I think we all know Omega's run is coming to an end. It seems like relatively soon, but who do you give it to? You know what I mean? Who's the person that ends up taking it? Do you put it on Punk immediately? Do you put it on, like, say Brian comes back and wins it in this first month? I mean, there's just so many different directions to go. AEW deserves to have, you know, the faith of people, because they've done a pretty good job with this stuff. But again, I really do think the toughest decisions and stuff are ahead, because when you have that loaded of a roster and they don't have two world titles, I mean, I guess Omega makes you think they do with all the other different promotions, but they don't have two titles. There's only one world title. And it's going to be fascinating to see which way they go. Real quickly, Sam, you got anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Team Turnbuckle. But with Spandex Orphans, Discord chat is great. Also want to promote Fanbyte for Emily Pratt. If you're looking to get caught up on New Japan, go to Fanbyte.
The groups, IB Network, IB Entertainment, IB Sports, the Patreon pays for your all-star package, Levy Fines, Mutes, Commish for the day.
I'm going to shamelessly plug my other podcasts, all on the Ivy Sports Network. So I'm still plugging that on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. But me and Joe Matt's going to get together Sunday. We're going to do one final fantasy football preview. We're going to talk stock up, stock down on guys and, you know, people that have been affected by the preseason, whether that be through injuries, plays, reports, et cetera. We're going to try to go through as many guys as possible without going into too much great detail, because we know me and Joe can do that. And then, you know, just again, all the other podcasts on the network, you got a Minute Fam, et cetera. And please follow the Twitter account for Team Turnbuckle. I know Sam yada yadded it like a lane, but we want you to follow the Twitter and Facebook group. It is the Team Turnbuckle podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, please be sure to follow or ask to join the group. And for any wrestling fans, please do as well. It's an exciting time in wrestling. I love that I'm back talking with both of these boys. So for the Chief Keith Fleming, Ravishing Ron L. Tinsley, Sam, the Shooter Mark Howell, this has been another edition of the Team Turnbuckle Podcast, and we will see you guys soon.